This is On the Ground Ipsy on 89.1 WEMU, your community NPR station. I'm Patrick Campion, and this is an opportunity each week for us to really focus on that word community, and specifically our Ypsilanti community. We obviously are on Eastern Michigan University's campus, which sits in the city of Ypsilanti, kind of in the middle of the township of Ypsilanti, and one of the few places where we differentiate between the city and the township are in conversations like this, because it is so much focused on this place we are so proud to be a part of and have been since 1965, Ypsilanti. And another person that's proud to be of Ypsilanti is the project manager for Concentrate Media, Sarah Rigg.
Good morning. Good morning.
Welcome. And tell us, give us the 30,000-foot overview of why On the Ground Ipsy is happening and continues to happen.
Sure. Well, anybody who's lived in Washtenaw County for, you know, even a few months knows that most of the media outlets don't do much coverage of Ypsilanti unless something violent or bad happens. So On the Ground Ypsilanti is our chance to tell the story of the people and the organizations and the businesses that are trying to find solutions to the problems and, you know, just generally good news or, you know, trending good news in Ypsilanti and Ypsilanti Township.
And this isn't the only great work that Concentrate Media does in our community. You could find more at concentratemedia.com. And if you are on the social media machines, it's Twitter is Concentrate A2.
Right.
Everything else is Concentrate Media.
Yep.
All right. Are you on MySpace or in
I don't
Friendster?
Think we're on.
Okay.
Right. I don't think
no?
so.
Okay. All right. I'll delay my age a little bit. I'll AOL instant message you later.
Okay.
All right. And what was the topic of conversation this week?
So we're going to be talking about Sugar Brook neighborhood. They were pretty hard hit by the downturn in the economy, and so were several other of the neighborhoods in Ypsilanti Township, and several others have bounced back, but Sugar Brook's still been struggling a little bit. So the township specifically asked Habitat for Humanity of Huron Valley to come in, and there's been some work by the Neighborhood Association and the neighbors and Habitat and the township. Everybody's working together to bring Sugar Brook back to where it should be.
And you brought with you a couple guests today. Tell me who you got.
I've got Glenn Fitzhugh, who is the president, I believe, leader, head of the Neighborhood Watch.
Coordinator for
the Neighborhood Watch for Sugar Brook. And I've got Kira, who is from Habitat for Humanity Huron Valley.
All right, so Kira, let's start with you. Welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And I think you and I were talking a little bit before we recorded, but when I hear Habitat for Humanity, the first thing that comes to mind is Jimmy Carter and building houses.
Mm-hmm.
And I know from having done interviews like this a lot of times that there's way more work happening in the community that Habitat is organizing or helping with. And it sounds like this is a project more along those lines, where you're not physically building houses, but helping a neighborhood revitalize itself. So tell me first, what is the state of Habitat for Humanity of Huron Valley? You know, what kind of organization is it? And what kind of works are they doing in our community?
Well, we are multiple things. We're community development. We are the homeownership program, which is probably what we're most famous for. We're also a veterans program, a home improvement program where we provide free refrigerators, we change people's furnaces, all sorts of things. We also have a financial class program. So there are lots of things. I work with a ton of different people, and we're just a big group.
And Restore, too.
One of my faces.
So when I'm doing stuff on my home, I like to get my bargains on sinks and toilets and things
Love that.
Great deals there.
Yes, and we help, I think, divert about 750 tons of waste per year. And we've moved. We're now on Jackson Road. And I really recommend the Restore. It's wonderful.
So there's this whole pantheon of things that Habitat's mm-hmm. up to in our community. And you mentioned development. I think that, again, when we think about Habitat, we think about houses and building materials and things, some mm-hmm. of those things we just discussed. But tell me, what does that mean? What does neighborhood development or community development mean?
So many things. Well, so one thing I do want to say is that within the recent years, we've switched from actually building houses to refurbishing them.
Okay.
I don't know if that's the right word.
Right, but you mentioned just even the little things like refrigerators and furnaces, mm-hmm. energy efficiency.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked about this in the past that you might not think about it, but having high utility bills because you have inefficient utilities is one of the detriments of being just living in poverty. And most people living under the poverty line or close to it don't have the money to buy a new refrigerator that's super energy efficient. So,
absolutely.
You know, you're more than just giving them something new and bright and shiny. You're helping mm-hmm. them to divert money away from utility bills and toward, yeah. And you know, the energy savings and making our world healthier at the same time are all great things, too. Sorry, I'm interrupting your discussion on what's development.
No, I was just going to say that we really try to help people stay in their homes. That's okay. What we really want.
That's a great way to summarize it. Yeah. And there's so many things you can do for people mm-hmm. to help the education and jobs and community enrichment and stuff.
Yeah.
Has this always been a part of Habitat, or is this a newer development?
We're always developing okay. new things. It is wonderful that I'm working with so many creative people. I know that the financial education part, that's fairly recent. The community development is still quite recent as well. So there are constant additions and refrigerators.
It's a sign of an organization getting smarter. I don't know, that might not be the right word, but correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like you were looking at more than just people need homes. You're looking at why do people have to leave their homes? Why
exactly.
are people living in homes that are unsustainable for their mm-hmm. needs?
Yeah.
You know, what led them to that place? So
mm-hmm.
good. How did Sugarbrook get on your radar at Habitat for Humanity of Huron Valley?
We were invited by the township in 2016, and that's usually how it works. We're invited by the township to go into a neighborhood, and before that, it was Galt Village and West Willow. So we started in 2016 in Sugarbrook, and got to do a lot of fun things. And we started with, it really gained momentum in 2018 with a grant from Lowe's. And we were able to do a lot of work in Sugarbrook. And there are so many steps to the process. And the first step has been to form a steering committee with Glenn and other people from the neighborhood.
Well, good. You ask people from the neighborhood what they think they might need in
Absolutely.
Order to do this yeah. Revitalization
sure.
project. Good.
Sure.
Community development is solely resident driven.
What would the township come to you with? Did they come to you with a list of concerns of with things they've heard about, or they just say, "Hey, we've identified a neighborhood. Can you come take a look?"
I honestly don't really know, just because I've been at Habitat
okay.
for about a year, so I wasn't part of that conversation, but I just know that that's how it happens. We get invited. We don't decide that we're going to go into a neighborhood. It's really because there is a need, and I don't know if it's because the residents have talked to the township. They seem to be very much in conversation with the township in general.
Well, good. That's a good transition to Glenn here. Just as he's taking a drink of water, we're like a waiter. We wait till you have something in your mouth, and then we ask you a question. So, Glenn, from Sugarbrook, you are the coordinator of the Neighborhood Watch there, but a lifelong resident.
Yes.
Also Sugarbrook. Okay. So you have some perspective here.
I do.
Let's go back a few years here. You know, how did the neighborhood petition the township to try and get this help as an intervention, or what was going on in Sugarbrook that, you know, this need arose?
I think actually a lot of the issues became a lot of the foreclosures.
Okay.
A lot of people just gave up on their homes, excuse me, and walked away. So right. that gave the township a lot of issues. So now they're going to put them up for auction.
Right.
Instead, they would pull them off the market and give them to Habitat at a very reasonable cost, and then Habitat came in and started revamping the homes.
Well, that's a good way to keep away the predatory landlords that are trying
absolutely.
To scoop up properties at a low rate and
yes.
rent them to just whomever.
Yes.
And as a neighbor person living in that neighborhood, too, you probably want people around you who are resident owners.
Yes.
Because you're going to take more pride in something if you own it rather than just renting it. So that sounds good to start.
Right.
How did it kind of grow from there?
Well, once people start moving and start doing all the work themselves, the sweat equity, once they put into the home, it turns into home ownership.
Right.
So people start having pride. Start taking care of their yards, you know, they're looking around the neighborhood, and everything starts, it turns into like a good cancer if there's such a thing. It just starts moving forward, and everybody starts
right.
feeling the same way.
Well, and if we want to be really cynical, it helps raise the tax base for the township, too, because property values go up, and when property values go up, tax revenues go up, too.
Yes,
but there's a billion other positive aspects to it, but even financially it makes sense
sure.
for the township to encourage that kind of growth. So you've been around Sugarbrook for a while. I'm assuming, like most other neighborhoods in our community, around 2008, you hit a pretty low point.
Yes.
Do you know, like percentage-wise, what happened with home ownership, foreclosures, things like that?
I know it got to a point where we had probably every one out of three homes was a rental.
Mm.
Because people, once they started closing the plants, tax base got hit. So people just kind of took the buyout or relocated and moved back south. Gave their homes up, either let them get foreclosed on or gave them to a relative.
Yeah, and Sugarbrook, just to remind people, is one of the neighborhoods that kind of grew up around the factories
yes.
and the industrial complex of
yes.
Ypsilanti. And as those factories closed, and as you mentioned, you know, people had a choice to find something new to do or go somewhere else to live, unfortunately.
Right.
With Sugarbrook, it's on the south side of 94, right? Is it or is it on the north?
It is.
Okay, so you're one of the communities that was kind of cut off from the rest of Ypsilanti, too, when they built the railroad and they built the freeway.
Yes.
Have you been there long enough to kind of seen the difference, you know, in how the neighborhood was at its peak when everybody had great UAW or other factory-type jobs versus today? I mean, what's the change in the tenor of the neighborhood?
When I first moved in the neighborhood, obviously my dad bought the home, I think, in 63.
Okay.
From his house to the highway, there was nothing. So within the next 10 years, an entire neighborhood got built. So the rest of Sugarbrook got built from George Street back.
So you filled in.
Filled back in. And also Westville did the same thing.
Right.
So they brought all these homes in, which filled all the factories up. A lot of people came up from down. They started calling it Ypsitucky.
Right.
But a lot of people started coming up, and they started going to work. So it filled it up. I mean, everybody was Mr. Thompson, Mrs. Wallace, you know, and things, you know, everybody had a little pride in themselves.
Right.
And then, again, once that started happening and everything started going south, people started leaving. We lost the school in 2009, which hurt really bad. Because that's a core, you know, it's a nucleus of a neighborhood. You have 572 homes, and you have a school that's closed. People don't walk their kids to school anymore.
Right.
So that became an issue. So they started going outside of that, as well as the church. So other neighborhoods have churches in their neighborhood and active schools, which, again, keeps that community back together, that feel of community.
Yeah, and it kind of sounds like a downward spiral that once you get caught in this cycle, something's got to help you get out of it.
Yes.
And it sounds like now, over the last few years, you're making a good concentrated effort to try and rise above those circumstances.
Yes.
So tell me, what's Sugarbrook like today?
It's getting better.
Okay.
I've seen it a lot worse. I mean, probably 6 years ago, houses were all, you know, boarded up. Nobody cared. Foreclosures, people would leave their water running in the basement, let it fill up.
Ugh.
You know, telling the bank, you know, hey, you can eat the house because I don't want to deal with it.
Yeah.
Well, once that started happening, that's when Habitat came in, our saving grace. I love Habitat. For what they do, Habitat of Huron Valley, they're there anytime you call them, day or night. If you need something, they're right there. So they've been an integral part of actually the revitalization of Sugarbrook. And the township sees that. So the township's stepping up to help as well.
So let's talk about some of the physical things that Habitat's helped with. I mean, I'm thinking about new roofs, gutters, paint jobs, appliances, as Kira mentioned. You know, what are some projects you've been involved in?
Well, I know Habitat does this every year. I believe it's once or twice a year. They'll take like 5 to 9 homes, and they'll just pick them out. They'll have people put on a list, and they'll pick these homes. And they go back and they put new wood chips in, they'll put flowers in, they'll clean up the yard, clean up the blight around the yard, work with these people on a, you know, revitalizes the neighborhood, beautifies it. But then there's also, again, like she said, the refrigerator. Awesome. I did it myself. I had an old refrigerator. They came back, took it, and Lowe's dropped off a new one. So the furnace, they come back and redo that as well. But, I mean, the outlook of the neighborhood, I've met a lot of these people that have purchased these homes. They're right there every day. They're always involved. They're talking to all their neighbors. It's getting that I know my neighbor kind of feeling again.
And she mentioned, too, Kira mentioned, things outside of the physical stuff, I mean, development-type things. I mean, what's going on in Sugarbrook to kind of help your neighbor on a different level with kids, with community, just, you know, getting together to help? Neighborhood Watch is an example of something like that. Helping people with jobs, with education, those developmental-type things, or small business, you know, helping neighbors out. You know, are you seeing more of neighbors helping neighbors, and what are some things you're seeing?
I'm seeing, well, the Sheriff's Department's gotten involved as well. So they're getting these programs together for the younger children before they get off track. So they come pick up a whole bustle of them and take them to the rec center. So the Sheriff's Department is doing, they even have a movie night, which I think we're going to do a little bit more of that this year. But they're getting involved. And again, with Habitat, again, they're beautifying the neighborhood. And they're always reaching out to our Neighborhood Watch meetings all the time and always coming up with new documentation and new ideas.
So you're getting to a place, again, where Sugarbrook sounds more like a community where you know your neighbors,
yes.
You know your neighbor's kids, you know who's around, that you know you can step in and say, hey, what are you doing kind of stuff. You know,
yes.
Like an old kind of typical neighborhood feel where you're not strangers, you're a bigger family, and you're all helping each other out.
People start waving back.
All right, and it sounds like Habitat has a big hand
Absolutely.
In helping you get to that place.
Yes.
So it sounds like, you know, you've got a ways to go maybe still. You know, what's on your mind for what Sugarbrook can become or what should it be doing next?
Well, Kettering just got demolished. So that was one of our prime objectives. So I was a strong advocate for that. YCS actually took care of that. They've got it leveled. What we're going to do with the property next, I want to change that to a common area to where you have Jungle Gym for the little kids. You can have like a small pavilion or something so we can start having our Neighborhood Watch meetings there.
Yeah, like an old school community park.
Exactly. You have a little path you can walk around, little, you know, places where you can sit down.
Baseball field?
No. had one there before. It doesn't get used enough.
All right.
So the jungle gym, I think, would work. A trail would work with, you know, little benches for people to sit on.
I'm a big baseball guy, sorry. So I was envisioning, like, you know, kids getting together with their glove and their mitt to play old school neighborhood baseball. No, none of the kids do that anymore, but, you know.
No, but I mean, that's a huge part of what's going
to
happen.
Yeah, I just wanted to jump in here real quick and say that Habitat, going back to this, everything is resident driven. They had a visioning session at the end of January with the neighborhood and came up with four working groups on different topics. So maybe Glenn and Kira want to talk about that, what their priorities were that came out of that visioning session.
That's a good question, Kira. I think that Sarah brings up a good point. Obviously, you don't want to force solutions on people that don't agree with what they're having, you know, thrown upon them. So how do you work with a neighborhood to determine what it is the neighborhood wants of itself?
Okay, so everything is resident-driven, and we start off with a survey. And we surveyed for about a year in Sugar Brook, and we got 133 responses. And the purpose of that survey was to find out what do the residents really like about their neighborhood and what do they feel needs improving. And at the end of January of this year, we had a big neighborhood vision meeting. And the purpose of that was to provide the residents with the data that we isolated from the surveys. And we basically came up with three issues that seemed to be priorities to the residents, and those were safety, amenities, and neighbor relations. And we invited the residents to split up in groups and talk about those subjects and imagine what they want it to look like. And they actually came up with an additional group. One was Kettering, and one was youth activities, and unfortunately, safety kind of just fell off the grid a little bit and just merged with amenities. But so there are now four action groups, and they are all led by residents. They're group champions. And we've been meeting with them on a regular basis just to determine what do you want to do in this group and what are the next steps to go there and how can we help you find funding to do this.
And Glenn, as a resident of Sugar Brook, I mean, Kira mentioned safety there. It would seem to me that if you take care of these other things, safety would come along with them. If neighbors know each other better, if there's more community spaces, if houses are improved, and there's just a better, you know, feeling all around that this is a quote-unquote safer neighbor, just by the look of it, that it engenders a greater level of safety. So is that kind of what's on your mind there?
Absolutely. I mean, a lot of people now, they're not shutting their blinds. They're actually speaking out. You know, if they see an issue, they'll call the sheriff's department. I guess a suspicious person. What's going on at this house? People aren't just keeping in closed anymore.
Well, it's a beautiful thing feeling like somebody is helping.
Yes.
And I think that makes people feel like they're not lost.
And the good thing is the bad people are starting to realize this. So they're moving their business elsewhere. So the streets are kind of cleaning themselves up. But the sheriff's department's been an integral part of that. We've had Sergeant Rush and his mounted, they actually come walking through on Clydesdales. 2,000-pound horses just walk through. Kids love it. I mean, it's incredible seeing when you see it.
And we've talked to Sheriff Clayton about this, that one of the goals with that is that they want people to start getting used to interacting with the cops at a time other than one of the worst experiences of your life. You know, if you've just gotten pulled over or you've been in an accident or your house has been robbed or you're the victim of a crime, that's generally when we interact with police. So we start thinking pretty negatively about them because of that.
Yes.
You see, like, there's a more positive outlook on the role of the sheriff and his deputies in the community?
It's not so much enforcement anymore, it's more engagement or empowerment.
Okay.
You know, they don't want to just arrest everybody. They would rather work with them. So, I mean, getting a hold of the kids when they're younger, that we don't have to deal with them when they're older.
Yeah, I think the ideal jail population at County Lockup would be zero.
That would be, then nobody'd have a job.
Right.
Which is, obviously, but that's the idea. If everybody has something to do, the kids are always going to be busy. Give them a common place to go and something to do. And then that way you don't have to worry about it. And instead of having kids walking down the street scraping on the side of your car when you drive by, now the kids are waving at the older people, you know, and they're helping them
out.
They
take pride in the community.
They do. They're starting to, yes.
Kira, if I know there's people listening right now that are thinking, gosh, either I'd love to talk about how we can work this out in our neighborhood or want to help. They're hearing something. They're thinking, man, I could lend a hand, or how can I help out some other neighborhood to help them rise, you know, because rising tide lifts all ships, right? How do they get in touch with you or Habitat for Humanity if you're on Valley?
Well, we love volunteers, so we love help. So our phone number is 734-677-1558, and our website is www.h.h4h.org, and they can definitely speak to me directly, and I'd be happy to to help. And we're very personable, so if ever anyone wants to just reach out to us, we're definitely there to have a chat.
And Glenn, if somebody's living in Sugarbrook right now listening to this going, I had no idea any of this is going on, which, right. you know, I'm sure there are some.
There are, absolutely.
How do they find you? How do they find out more information?
Well, there's a neighborhood watch the fourth Tuesday of every month.
Okay.
At St. Mark's on Harris Road at 6:30 to 7 is when we start. I buy pizza every month, so there's always something to eat.
Free food, you hear that? All right,
free food. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to worry about your stomach growling.
That's the only reason I go.
That's what a lot of people do. But it's a good sit-down discussion. The sheriff's department's there, the fire department there, the township's there. We also have road commission people come in. So anybody that you want a discussion with, touch base with me at that point. I'll share my more information, my personal information, then we can talk later at another point.
Does the Neighborhood Watch have matching jackets?
No.
Oh, all right. Something to work on for
but
the future.
But we do maybe. Have matching shirts.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Courtesy of partially this partnership with the Huron or the Habitat for Humanity.
The Huron Valley.
All right.
Yeah.
Yes.
It was thanks to the grant from Lowe's, we were able to design these wonderful Sugarbrook T-shirts, which we've been giving out to the residents.
They're awesome. Cool.
And they have all cool. of the names of the streets. So it's just
perfect.
Part of that that
that's
pride
great.
In your neighborhood.
And that's what I was just going to say. It's like nothing to show off your pride more of your neighborhood than wearing around
Absolutely.
A shirt saying, this is where I'm from.
Right.
Well,
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Kira. Thanks for being here today. Glenn,
thank you.
Thanks for sharing your view of Sugarbrook over the years here. And I think best of luck moving forward here.
It
sounds like you're on a nice trajectory.
We'll
keep and if you have more stories, please come share them with us, and
we'd love to
hear more. Sarah, I'm assuming Doug's pictures are going to be awesome like always.
I'm sure they will be.
All right, what do you got going for us next week?
I'm doing a piece on the Washtenaw chapter of My Brother's Keeper. It was an Obama-era initiative to have men of color mentoring young men of color and, helping them succeed. And the local chapter has had a couple of iterations, and they had trouble sort of sustaining it. But now they've got some funders, and they're looking forward to, getting down and doing some missions. They don't want to reinvent the wheel and, create a lot of programs. What they want to do is fortify and amplify the signal on groups that are already doing work around this topic in the community.
Well, we love talking to people that are reaching a hand out and helping others in our community. So looking forward to that next week. And again, we can find you, concentratemedia.com. And if you we're trying to keep track of the contact information, any of that kind of stuff, you can find it all linked at WEMU.org or write in Sarah's piece again at concentratemedia.com. This is 89.1 WEMU FM and HD1 Ypsilanti.